Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour one.
Welcome. It's Eric Erickson. It is Open Line Friday. The phone number, 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, we loosen up the rules a little bit today. As always, if you text Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777, you can get the show notes, the podcast, the live stream, all that fine stuff. So I actually want to begin with some audio my buddy Bill sent me yesterday. I had missed this audio. I wish I had snagged this, and then he flagged it for me. And I played you the other day the conversation between Joe Scarborough and Scott Galloway, where he was putting in perspective, having gone to Israel and seen it, how much better it is for the people in Gaza in this war than it has been historically in war, the minimizing of casualties Israel has done, among other things. And it was good perspective. But there was also this conversation, and I missed this part, and this is so relevant to so much of what we're seeing, with the student protests and other things going on. Listen to this.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries, and they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down, and the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants. So the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own, skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up, because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged, and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry, and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing. We have lost the script. Our kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. And we have made a purposeful decision to let this happen.
Okay. There are portions I agree with and there are portions I disagree with. And I want to start with what I disagree with. I am still paying on my law school loans, and I haven't practiced law since 2006. Not only that, I still pay annually to keep my law degree because I worked very hard to earn it, even though I'm not practicing law. I'm an inactive lawyer, so I pay a reduced fee, but I pay it. Still pay those loans. When I got out of law school, I was not making enough. My wife and I both worked, and for a time, we were not making enough to pay our utilities and our rent. We didn't own a home at the time, and pay off our student loans. I had to defer loans. That's why I'm still paying off loans. There was a period of time where I was not making a lot of money. My wife and I combined were making about $40,000. My income went up. When I left the practice of law, after 5 years at a law firm, I was making about $50,000. My wife was making $22,000. Combined, we were making $72,000 after 5 years of marriage. And costs were going up. My wife very fortunately inherited some money. She was able to buy herself a vehicle, so we didn't have a car payment. And we were able to put a down payment on a home. My law firm happened to represent Bank of America. I was able to get a good interest rate on the home at a time where interest rates were about where they are right now. It wasn't easy. The problem is some younger Americans have lived in a world where they haven't really had to sacrifice, and they're angry about it. Many of them lived in backgrounds with college-educated parents, and this is the rub here. The thing we're seeing is it's the kids of college-educated parents who had a good existence, and they're upset because their existence is not as good, but they're just starting out. Are costs higher now? Yes, but why are costs higher? They're higher not because of Donald Trump, not because of Republicans. They're higher because Joe Biden passed a massive stimulus plan with COVID that to this day, the very people like Scott Galloway who make these complaints aren't willing to hold Joe Biden accountable for them because he's scared it might help Donald Trump if he tells the truth, that it's the massive spending of Joe Biden and the Democrats that caused this. You know, this story intersects with so many stories we're talking about. I actually think that there's something to be said here for the conservative angst about the budget and spending, and we can't fund Ukraine, and we can't do all this stuff, and we have massive spending. A lot of this is the fallout from that as well. There is this idea that is pervasive in society at this moment, across aisles, across partisan lines, that the best days are behind us, and people are beginning to believe it. And what do we have? We've got two octogenarians who barely can be coherent on most days, one of whom's just always angry, one of whom's always got dementia, neither of whom are painting a picture about the future. If you listen to Donald Trump, if you listen to Joe Biden and their platforms are always about the past, and their platforms are about grievance, and their platforms are about how bad the other side is. Their platforms are not about hope, their platforms are not about the future, and their platforms are not about a vision for a better America. Our leaders are failing us. But also, our leaders put in place a college system where they did not have to restrain costs. So to get a college degree, and let's be honest here, so many of the best jobs in this country require a bachelor's degree. And these companies aren't going to reduce it to a high school degree because great inflation and stupid high schools and poor education in the public school system means it's almost worthless. So you got to have the college degree to weed out the kids who actually know what they're doing. Who cares what the college degree is in? You just got to have a college degree. But then we've designed a system with student loans where colleges can continue to raise their prices and have zero accountability for the prices that they're raising because they know kids are going to get student loans and eventually have to pay them out. But the entire time they're in college, they never have to pay a penny. There's no incentive for college prices to come down. There is no incentive for retirees to sell their current properties because they have such good mortgage rates because of low interest rates when they refinanced that we've got an entire market out there where you've got overpriced housing that should come down in value. But you know what's going to happen? The government keeps bailing out the big businesses. The government keeps deciding people are too big to fail. This does go back to the Bush administration when the Bush administration decided because of the financial crisis in 2008, it needed to just start bailing everybody out, bailed out General Motors. It didn't let bankruptcies happen. It didn't let the creative destruction of the marketplace happen. And when a society continues to prop businesses up and pick winners and losers and not allow the creative destruction of the marketplace to work for itself, well, people then begin to believe that the government's in on it because it is. And we haven't allowed the entrepreneur to shine. Kids have fallen behind. They see their standard of living not matching their parents. They see their high interest rates. But here's also the rub. Interest rates where they are right now are about normal. This anomaly of very low interest rates over the past 20 years or so, it was fine until Joe Biden and the left decided to spend as much as they did in COVID. Low interest rates were fine. The economy accommodated it and economic growth accommodated it until Joe Biden dumped so much money into the economic system. But let's be honest, Donald Trump did a big portion of it too. But Biden's was so much more. Even progressive economists warned that it would spark inflation, and it did. And the Democrats did not heed their own Democratic economists because the Democrats decided the old rules no longer applied. And what we're seeing right now and what we're dealing with right now is the return of the old rules, the very old rules about inflation, the very old rules about the economy. And kids are lashing out because a lot of the kids that are coming out of college now that are graduating, they grew up in an era where the old rules were forgotten and the old rules were ridiculed and the old rules were said not to apply. The old rules always applied. So the extent that there's angst, it should be directed to the Democrats and the wokes and the progressives and the academics who told them the old rules no longer applied. I think we see this existential crisis hitting conservatives about the debt and the interest payments and the cost of living and supposed forever wars and the military-industrial complex and all this. All of this comes from people forgetting the old rules still apply. And that's why I think conservatism could have a moment right now if conservatives stick together. Instead of rejecting the old ideas, we've stopped practicing the old ideas. We don't really have a free market right now. We used to. We abandoned it when we started picking winners and losers and the government started propping up all the businesses and creating moral hazard. Let them fail. Let creative people pick up the pieces. But the government didn't want to do that. And so along come people packaging new ideas, and sometimes they're very old, bad ideas, economic populism and the like, that we know don't work. And the young fall further behind. And what have we done? We have forced companies to jack up wages with a minimum wage that reduces the amount of ability to hire young people, to get them started in life, to give them experience, to give them a resume, because companies can't afford them. We've regulated cities over climate change to reduce the ability to expand and grow, which has driven up costs. We've restricted supply of land because of climate change, among other issues. We've encouraged people to go into cities where people don't want to build new buildings and people don't want to build new apartments. The left's policies are coming home. And here's the problem. There are no leaders on the right who are in a position right now to make the case that this is all progressivism coming home to roost. And what we're seeing is a bunch of people purportedly in the conservative movement embracing other bad progressive ideas as the solution to get out of it, when the real solution is if we just return to Ronald Reagan's idea and view that the government is the problem with so many things, we would find our way out of this. But no one wants to do the old boring stuff. Everyone wants the new and shiny stuff. It's a product of our culture right now. Everyone wants the new and shiny. And a lot of the new ideas are just repackaged bad old ideas. Milton Friedman, the famous free market economist, tells a story. He was driving through Europe and he saw a bunch of people and they were digging ditches with shovels. And Milton Friedman said, "Why are they digging ditches with shovels? We've got automotive mechanics. We've got ditch digging tools. We've got things they can use. They've got plows. They got backhoes. They've got all sorts of stuff they could use to dig these ditches." And the person he was with in Europe said, "Well, if we use the modern machinery, the backhoes and the like, well, then these people would not have jobs." And Milton Friedman said, "So why don't you give them spoons? You could hire even more people." Essentially, parts of the left and parts of the right have moved to the idea that, yes, let's give everyone spoons so we can create new jobs by regressing from efficiencies to inefficiencies and the government can bail things out. This isn't a solution to move forward. If you want a better America and you want more jobs ahead of us and you want more solutions and benefits for the kids today getting out of college and getting jobs, you've got to allow the free market to come back to life. You got to revitalize it. You got to stop picking the winners and losers. We know what works. And also, you've got to use the government to incentivize families instead of encouraging people to stop having kids. There are ways to do this, but they're deeply antithetical to the values and views of progressives, who the be-all, end-all of everything these days is saving the climate and the planet at the expense of humanity. And yet they've brainwashed these kids into thinking that it's the conservatives who are ruining their lives. It's time to point out it's the progressive ideas that keep failing. Welcome back. Okay, so I ran kind of long on that segment, so if you're on the phones, be patient with me. For those of you not yet on the phones, it is an open line Friday, 877-973-7425. I didn't think I was going to make it on time. Thankfully, I did. So I actually have been down in downtown Atlanta all day. So my office is in Midtown Atlanta. I've been down in downtown Atlanta at a hotel at a conference. I got asked to moderate some panels at a conference for my buddy Cole Muzio's group, Frontline Policy. They're one of the more effective conservative groups in the state of Georgia. And it's actually been on a lot of what we've been talking about. How do you balance like free enterprise and families and get government to focus on families? You know, there's more and more data out that Americans are not procreating. And that's actually a bad thing that moms and dads, well, they're not becoming moms and dads. They're just husbands and wives. And we're headed into a population decline. And typically, when you cease reproducing to match the birth rate, you don't recover from that. So how do we incentivize people to have kids without, one, breaking the bank, and two, becoming in some ways socialist as a country and building a big welfare state? You know, the incentive on the left, the idea on the left is that if we just build a big welfare state, it'll encourage people to have kids. And that's not actually the history of anywhere on the planet. The big welfare states in Europe actually are the ones that first went off the population cliff, those in Japan. I mean, there are portions of Japan that are rewilding, and not rewilding by design. You know, rewilding is the term where you allow developed areas to return to nature. In Japan, they're just doing it because there are no people. I've got a buddy of mine. His wife is Japanese, and they go to Japan, and their kids are treated like celebrities just by virtue of he's got four kids, all little boys. Something's got to change in this country. And you know, I'm not a big proponent of using the tax code to incentivize behavior, but we're already doing it, and there are incentives in society that we should reward in the tax code, like having kids. And so anyway, so I've been in these conversations this morning. I've got to go back this afternoon after the show to moderate a couple more panels. And it's about how do you, well, this afternoon there'll be a discussion on how does the right balance ideas on life when they seem to be on defensive? What line do they take? What strategies do they pursue? I got a conversation with my buddy Terry Schilling of the American Principles Project on family and incentivizing family. And you know, everybody also dealing with the issue of how do you balance the free market? How do you incentivize free market ideas? Or do we do some sort of government control? All these ideas now on the right up for grabs, particularly as we grapple with Joe Biden's economy, which has kind of forced some of these issues. You know, one of the groups that's actually in the mix arguing over these issues and developing ideas and actually standing up for free market principles is Americans for Prosperity. What really I think, and the reason I love partnering with Americans for Prosperity, is they haven't changed their ideas. Just given the last few years in politics, they're still conservative. They still believe in free market principles. They still believe in, you bring in free market principles in education, for example, like school choice. People have greater say in education, and they teach you to be an activist for these things. A lot of people these days, they've given up on persuasion. They just want to yell. Americans for Prosperity teaches conservative activists the fine art of persuasion to make their case, to convince people, and to stand out by making articulate cases filled with facts and figures. You can be a part of this movement. All you have to do is go to AmericansForProsperity.org/Eric. AmericansForProsperity.org/ERIC. Go to Americans for Prosperity. You sign up with them. They've got chapters in 36 states. They're growing in the other states. And you can become a more effective conservative activist for freedom, for your family, for free markets, for small businesses, for deregulation from the government so your small business can thrive. AmericansForProsperity.org/ERIC. Welcome back. It is Open Line Friday, 877-973-7425. Before I move on, there's a perfect tie-in here with Matt calling. Matt, you get to be the first caller today. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Eric. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so I was listening to the topic kind of about the younger workforce and folks who are in, you know, high school today going into the workforce. And I've got two kids, and, you know, we go to their high school looking at kind of career paths. And the only career paths that are there that I see is aerospace and technology. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about manufacturing. And that brings up a big concern for, you know, what these products that we all buy, and, you know, if we don't have the people to make them in the future, then what?
You know, there's a tie-in here, Matt, as an aside to nuclear energy, in that we've stopped building so many plants, other than this one in Georgia, that we've lost an entire generation of people who have the institutional memory to do that. And now you don't have to go to engineering and rocket and nuclear building, just deal with welders. We when I was in high school, the school knew there were a lot of kids who weren't going to go to college in rural Louisiana where I was from. And if you were a junior and senior in high school, there was a company that would allow you to miss the last 2 hours of school and teach you welding as a viable skill. And I know a lot of people who graduated with me from high school who never went to college but support their family as welders with a skill. And we have lost that vocational avenue for kids. We have prized so much the college degree. So many companies require the college degree. There are actually a vast array of people who can get great jobs as electricians and plumbers and welders, and they don't need the college degree. We've missed that and don't prioritize it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the vision, the view is some of this stuff is below them, but I think there's going to have to be some social change.
Yeah, there does. There. Frankly, I think a lot of people need to learn some humility. Speaking of learning humility, I got to play you this audio. So let's just say you take Scott Galloway's critique as legitimate. That Scott Galloway is the progressive whose audio I played in the first hour. And let's say you take Scott Galloway's critique as legitimate, that all the kids, they're angry, they have every reason to be angry, they've fallen behind, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Listen to this kid. This is one of the leaders of the protests at Columbia. This is a student. He's now in trouble with the university over his live stream he put online. Listen to part of it.
If we can agree as a society, as a collective, that people, that person, some persons need to die if they have an ideology that results in the death of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. If there are people like that who exist, shouldn't they die? Zionists, they're Nazis. They're Nazis. They're fascists. They're supporters of genocide. Why would we want people who are supporters of genocide to live? I'm confused. Someone in the chat right now. Should people who are supporters of genocide, should Zionists, aka Nazis, white supremacists, should they live? Should they live? Zionists, along with all white supremacists, need to not exist, because they actively kill and harm vulnerable people. They stop the world from progressing. Oh, okay, thank you. What? Thank you. And so, be glad, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. I've never murdered anyone in my life, and I hope to keep it that way. I genuinely hope to keep it that way. But when you have a whole bunch of Zionists and white supremacists and Nazis and fascists threatening your physical safety, one feels the need to remind them that one is not afraid to reach that point. And we know what that point is.
Oh, we know what that point is, don't we? This little gem of a blue London police box would be the first one off the roof in Gaza. His pronouns would become splat and her if he went to Gaza. You know it, and I know it, and he probably doesn't know it because he's ignorant. The blue London police box, a time and relative dimension in space. If you know, you know. And this kid doesn't know anything. He's a 20-year-old anti-capitalist, this is how he describes himself, anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, student and educator, supporting and teaching liberation everywhere, free Palestine. The only shocker about his Twitter profile is that he does not list pronouns. Now, this has caught up to him. His name is Kehmani James. I wonder if Kehmani is his cosplay name, or did his mommy and daddy really name him that? And now he's released an apology. On Thursday, a video of me taken back in January began to circulate online. What I said was wrong. Every member of our community deserves to feel safe without qualification. I want people to have more context for my words, which I really do regret. Far-right agitators went through months of, like, my social media feed until they found a clip that they edited without context when I recorded it. I had been feeling unusually upset after an online mob targeted me because I am visibly queer and black. Well, at least you know it's visibly. Okay. It's a 6-minute long tirade. The word editing, Nimrod, does not mean putting it out there in its entire context for people to see. The word editing means you selectively quoted it and strung things together to make it say what you did not say. You actually said you want to kill people, and people should be happy you didn't kill people. And oh, by the way, do you know how people got his rant? He leaves this out. Maybe he edited it out himself. This little Jim delivered this by video to Columbia University administrators themselves during a disciplinary hearing. And they let him walk away. They let him walk away. Be glad, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. I've never murdered anyone in my life, and I hope to keep it that way. This is one of the leaders of the activists on campus at Columbia. And the audio that I played you is from the video tirade he delivered to Columbia University administrators who let him walk away after saying that Zionists are Nazis who need to be murdered. Do you know what a Zionist is? Someone who believes in the right of the Jews to have a nation state. And this thing is harassing Jewish students on campus without ever trying to determine whether or not they believe the Jews need a nation state or not. Doesn't matter. They're Jews, therefore they're Zionists, therefore they need to be murdered because they are Nazis. That's his level of thinking. Now, there's a larger point to be made about this little Jim. This is why progressivism always leads to mass murder. The Nazis were National Socialists, the kissing cousins to the Communists, who killed more people than the Nazis, both of whom killed millions of people because they decided some people just need killing. Because they're a threat to the society the Nazis and the Communists and the little Jims like this want to build. Never mind that those same people would kill him. Never mind that if this visibly queer and black, in his words, activist went to Gaza and sashayed down the strip, snapping his fingers in solidarity with the Palestinians, they'd carry him up to the tallest remaining building the Israelis have not blown up, and they would toss him off and he would splatter on the ground. He doesn't care. Because the idiot is willing to side with the monsters who would kill him. because he hates Jews. And he thinks Jews should die. And Columbia University did nothing to him when he delivered the tirade. And we're looking at Columbia University today. Don't be surprised at what's happening by Columbia. The Columbia University administration set its university up for this. Designed and destined it to fall into the hands of Nazis who look at other people and call them Nazis. Of fascists who look at other people and say those are the fascists. Of monsters who look at hostages and call the hostages monsters. They lost the plot a long time ago. So many monsters and villains believe they're on the right side of history. So many monsters and villains think they're the good guys. This guy thinks he's the good guy. And he's only come out with an apology because it's been exposed and there's more outrage. But I'll tell you who should apologize is the administration at Columbia who allowed this Jim to get away with it, to run free, and to take the campus hostage to an anti-Semitic movement. These people are insane, and it's important we hear the insanity for themselves. It is a deeply incoherent philosophy that says they're on the side of the oppressed when the oppressed people they're on the side of are the ones who would gladly murder them. It's just a remarkable, remarkable turn of events that everybody needs to hear this stuff. Everybody needs to hear this guy, and everybody needs to understand that this is a guy who, in his own words, thinks we should be thankful that he hasn't gone out and killed Jews. Now, let's move on to something pleasant. Old Glory Bank, the pro-America online bank that believes in freedom and fairness, that's never going to cancel a law-abiding American for their politics or faith, as has been happening, by the way. John Eastman, President Trump's lawyer, two different banks have canceled his bank accounts just because of who he is. Old Glory Bank's mission statement is in the Constitution. Now you can do more than bank with them. Now you can own the bank with them, because now Old Glory Bank is offering Americans a unique chance to own a piece of the bank for the freedom economy. It's a bank that's grown 800% since it started opening online accounts a year ago. It's a bank that's at the forefront of innovation. Their app is so easy to use. They've created their own payment app called Old Glory Pay. They created a way to deposit cash at more than 88,000 retailers around the country. Now they've created an innovative way to own a piece of Old Glory Bank. For complete details on Old Glory Bank's unique public-private placement opportunity, go to own.oldglorybank.com. That's own, O-W-N, own.oldglorybank.com. Now, this round of funding ends May 10th, so owners, you need to be accredited investors. Ownership interest is not a deposit, Old Glory Bank. It's not FDIC insured. It's not guaranteed. It may lose value, but if you're interested in exploring ownership of Old Glory Bank, if you're an accredited investor, go to own.oldglorybank.com. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. They happen to be in Noonan, Georgia. The Frost family's been doing this since the 90s. They're still in charge of First Liberty Building and Loan. I say Noonan, Georgia for this reason. The website is firstlibertyga.com. And some people outside Georgia, they hear that and think, ah, well, they don't help me. Actually, they work in all 50 states. They may be in Georgia, not New York City. They help people in every state. If you're a business and you're buying a building, or you're building a building, or you are buying a franchise or expanding a franchise or buying out a competitor or a business partner, those are the deals First Liberty Building and Loan specializes in. Reach out to them, firstlibertyga.com. Tell them I sent you. If you need $250,000 or more, firstlibertyga.com. Now, let's see here. I've got time for Tracy's phone call. Tracy, welcome to the Eric Erickson Show.
Hey, thanks for the recommendation on We Were the Lucky Ones. Great show on Hulu.
Oh, fantastic.
My question is, when the Title IX changes go into effect in August, how will it reconcile with state legislation that's occurred that forbids boys and girls spaces? And I don't think many people know it's K through 12, and that could affect these overnight school field trips. And then another question is, how is it that states like Tennessee can pass some legislation about this topic of keeping boys out of girls' spaces in sports, and other states, Georgia with Republican majorities, cannot? What's the secret sauce or common denominator?
Okay, so the secret sauce is in Tennessee, the Republicans are not scared of urban and suburban Democrats taking over, so they have more confidence. The Republicans in Georgia get a little scared that the Democrats might take over if they do something like this. They can be kind of chicken in Georgia. They need to be stronger. The other issue, though, is that so what Joe Biden is doing, the way they do it is they tie it to money. Your state schools get federal money. And so what Joe Biden is doing is saying, hey, if you like your law that says boys can't be in girls' locker rooms, that's fine. But you're not going to get any federal money. So you need to decide, do you want federal money or do you want the purity of your convictions? That's how they do it. I frankly think there should be a law that says the federal government cannot hold strings to states for appropriations that gets around that sort of stuff. But that's the world we live in. The way it's structured is there's nothing unconstitutional about it per se. However, states are challenging it on this basis. The definitions within Title IX rely on sex, not gender. And because they rely on sex, and sex is a biological scientific thing that is a binary, the states have an argument that they're being undermined and that Title IX is being rewritten by bureaucrats outside the bounds of what Congress intended. And therein lies the rub. Now, when we come back, I actually want to start with Matt calling from Tulsa. Don't have time for his call, but I want to actually start this because I was going to talk about this in the next hour anyway. This particular topic. What is that topic? Well, you're going to have to wait for Matt and me to discuss it. Also, this morning, I mentioned I was at this conference. The Heritage Foundation did focus groups around the country. And in those focus groups, they asked a lot of swing voters in the 9 swingiest counties of the 7 swingiest states in America their views on issues. There was some remarkable consistency across states and across counties, across income levels, and across racial demographic groups, including a pattern of black men very open to Donald Trump in 2024, not because they like him or trust him. They don't like him and they don't trust him. They just hate Biden more and distrust Biden more. That's what the data shows. I want to talk to you about this data. I had a great discussion this morning with Rob Bluey, Eric Tietzel, and Ryan Walker from the Heritage Foundation about it.